Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Danielle Hage Podcast. I'm your host, Danielle. And I just want to thank you for, if you've been following me and subscribing for this last year, thank you. I so appreciate that. I appreciate your comments and your questions. It's been a really fun year for me. This podcast, if you're new, it's all about relationships. I'm talking to men and to women how to understand our opposite gender and how to live together in peace and harmony, bottom line. So recently, I've been getting invited to be on some different podcasts, and I was invited to be on the Gentleman Scofflaw podcast. These two young men, Jordan and Donovan, who are hilarious, they're comedians, and they had all these questions about relationships, and we just had a great conversation. It was really fun. So I am going to share that with you today so that I hope you will enjoy it. And don't forget to subscribe. If what you are hearing and learning is benefiting you and you think it might benefit somebody you know, share it with them and then remind them to subscribe also. The more subscribers we get enables us to have new guests on our show. And we just never know where it's going to go from there. So we're excited and we're glad that you're here.
I'm excited to have this guest. I've been following her Instagram for a while and recently got into listening to the full-on podcast that she uploads over wherever you can find wherever you listen to your podcast. Danielle Hage, thank you so much for coming on.
Well, you are so welcome, and I am honored to be here. It's a privilege.
I think your content's great. It's really refreshing nowadays on social media. I think it's very helpful for relationships and couples or people that are looking to get involved in a relationship. Before we get into some of that, I'd love for you to kind of let our listeners know a little bit about your background and what you do.
My husband and I have we've been pastoring a church for the last 20-something years in Southern California. We are going on 44 years of marriage. We have three adult children, five grandchildren, and one due this month. So that makes number six.
Wow.
And I've been teaching. I'm, you know, just kind of have a passion for marriage and family and relationships, getting married, staying married, helping women to understand men and helping men to understand women so that we can all live in peace and harmony together. And I've been doing seminars and teachings, you know, for the last 20 years for men and women. And my son, almost 1 year ago, exactly, he said, "Mom, we need to start a podcast." And I said, "Really?" I go, "Well, I don't know how to do all that techie stuff." And he goes, "I know." He goes, "You're going to come to Dallas once a month and we're going to record out here." And he goes, "You have great information and we need to get it out there." And up to this point, my information has really just been within the cocoon of the church world. And I teach all over, but it's really just been for the church. And now being on social media, I was on social media a little bit. I think I had like 700 followers, but now I'm putting my stuff out there and it's just gone crazy. And like the whole world is seeing it, which is amazing. I mean, thanks to the internet. And I have to say, in this last year, I have learned so much from the reactions and the comments and the interaction from the people out there. And it's part of it saddens me because there's a lot of very hurt, bitter men toward women. And there's a lot of hurt, bitter women toward men. Yeah. And I just see the need, you know, people need help and everybody's interested in relationships at some level, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's a relationship with your spouse or your children or your parents or your siblings. So, but I was surprised. Christian and I both were very surprised at the feedback that we got and all of the good positive feedback too. Of course, there's some haters, definitely some negative stuff for sure. And at first I thought, I'm not going to be able to handle that, you know? And Christian said, "You're not going to look at the comments." He goes, "We will funnel through and we'll let you know if you need to see something." Well,
good advice.
That I couldn't do it, you guys. I couldn't help it. I mean, I'm seeing there's 500 comments. I want to see what they're saying. So right. I just started looking and I'm like, first of all, the negative ones are not personal to me. I don't take it personal. They don't know me. They're just commenting on my information, right? And that's not personal to me. So that doesn't bother me. But it's helped me to really see where people are at. and which helps me, you know, with my podcast. Okay, here's what people need to hear. Here's what people need to learn. So it's been a really fun year with all of this.
That's really cool. Great son too, to help you out with that.
He is.
So what strikes me about your content is, so we kind of live in a day and age where there's these, you talked about, there's these kind of like these two extremes. There's like, you know, the super modern feminist ideas. And then this kind of like, because the kind of red pill world, red pill world, manosphere, that kind of stuff, where they're just like diametrically opposed.
More black pilled usually. They're almost so cynical.
That we're like, that it's just basically totally out of any realm of reality. But what your stuff is really practical and helpful, I find. And then you play both sides of it too. Like, you know, you're helping both women and men understand each other, which is always important. A couple of questions based on some of your content that I'd love to get into. So we're talking about like this day and age, you know, we're in the age of kind of equality, obviously. But are men and women really different, or is that an old-fashioned idea?
No, it is not an old-fashioned idea. We are completely opposite. We are very, very different. And I think part of the problem today in relationships is because our culture is trying to tell us we're the same. Yeah. You know, women can do anything men can do. And equality. Well, the feminist movement has been great to get us equality, equal pay for equal work and equal rights. And I'm all about women empowerment, but not at the expense of your relationship with your husband or your children. And because the feminist movement started out with a good idea, but I think they've gone to the extreme over the last 40 years where, you know, you can have it all, ladies, you can be married, have a career, be the boss, raise kids, and still have energy. And it's just not true. We can't have it all. But so many women drank that Kool-Aid thinking they could have it all. And there's so many women at young ages getting sick because they're having adrenal burnout. They're getting breast cancer or other kinds of illnesses because it's exhausting. Yeah. And you might be able to have it all in a lifetime, but you can't have it all at one time without something suffering. Either your kids are going to suffer, your marriage is going to suffer, your work is going to suffer, or you're going to suffer. And so I think, you know, women kind of drank the Kool-Aid, and now it's almost like I see a reverse effect coming where older women in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, some of them are saying, you know what? I did it wrong. I did believe what the feminists said, and I have been very successful, and I do have my own money, and I am very independent, but I have nobody to share my life with. They're alone, you know, they're older, and they've got no one to travel with and to share their life with. And I just think that is so sad. And I know women personally at that age, you know, my age and a little bit younger, a little bit older, who have said, I thought marriage was a cop-out. I didn't have the guts to get married. And this one friend of mine has said, you know, in a group of women, she said, you guys all were very brave. And she's the only one that has never been married, never had children. She'll never have grandchildren. And she doesn't like her decisions. You know, she's saying, I didn't do it right. And she had plenty of marriage proposals back in her day. And she said, No, because I don't want to cob out. I don't have to need a man. I can do it all by myself. I'm self-sufficient. That's what the women's movement taught women. And it gets women into their masculine energy. All of us have feminine energy and masculine energy, both men and women. Okay. Mm-hmm. But when a woman has to do everything on her own and be independent and call the shots and be the boss, it naturally puts her into her masculine energy. And that's awesome when you're at work. But when you come home, ladies, if you want to have a romantic relationship, you need to leave the masculine energy at the office and you need to transition back into your feminine energy and be a woman. Because no masculine man wants to be married to another masculine man. It's competition. You know, if there's two protectors and providers in one relationship, they're going to compete with each other.
Yeah.
And so the woman needs to go back to being the receiver, the responder. The man needs to be the initiator, the giver. And that's how a relationship works. One masculine energy, one feminine energy in the relationship. It's the only way it can work.
That makes a lot of sense. And I like what you said too about the male side too, which is, you know, maybe it's a because of, you know, how far feminism has gone recently, or you know, talking about, you know, the stuff that's not helpful in recent years. Men tend to be kind of hands off in a lot of relationships or in their families, and don't take initiative. And I don't know if that's just from feeling like they can't get involved, you know, can't take over because that's unhelpful to feminism, or what do you think that's about? Why is it that men haven't been stepping up as much?
I think there's probably a lot of reasons, but I think one of them could be that men have been really beaten down in the last years, 10, 20 years, maybe even longer. They've been beaten down. The whole Me Too movement, you know, which is great because we don't want to see men abusing women. But I think almost even the whole red pill movement, I don't know that much about it, but it seems like a really drastic reaction to the whole Me Too thing. And I think because women have become so masculine in the last 30 years that they have said, we don't need men. And I think men are afraid of women. You know, women in their masculine energy, they become very emasculating toward men, you know, chopping them down. Women know that men are bigger and stronger. We know we're smaller and weaker. So in order to even the playing field, we need to bring them down a notch so that we don't have to be afraid of them. So we try to disempower them through emasculation, telling them, comparing them to other men, telling them how to do things, and you're not doing it good enough, and your way isn't the right way, and not allowing a man to lead, not allowing a man to solve their problems. So I think a lot of men have just backed off, like, fine, you don't need me, fine. Yeah. And I think that's sad, you know, yeah, because the more masculine women have become, it seems like the more feminine men have become.
Yeah.
But if women will learn to stay in their feminine energy when they're with men that they want to be romantic with, the more feminine a woman is, the more masculine a man can be. Wow. And on the other side of that, if a man stays confident in his masculinity and not insecure, because an insecure masculine man he could turn to being over-controlling, over-domineering, to exert his dominance because he feels like he's less of a man on the inside. But if he is comfortable with who he is and he's secure in who he is, and he's just naturally in his masculine, a leader, an initiator, wants to take care of a woman, wants to provide, wants to make her happier, wants to meet her needs, a woman will naturally go into her feminine. She will naturally submit to a man. So...
You know what's funny about that? The irony is that I feel like the process of courtship and dating has really taken a hit over the last, you know, maybe decade and a half. I know that like there were questions like going as far back as 10 years where people were like, what is with everything? Like, you know, why can't, you know, people find dates, or why, you know, and everybody was on Tinder.
Yeah.
It's so interesting how like men, I know for a fact that it seems like a lot of men are afraid to pursue women, to even ask a woman out. They're intimidated. And, you know, I mean, some of that is on men. They need to sort of reformat their attitude maybe, but a lot of it I think is coming from the general atmosphere of just like, oh, well, if you go and ask a woman out, you're going to be seen as a creep, or you're going to be seen as like you'll be shot down. But there are so many, I mean, you just go on YouTube. There are so many YouTube videos of people, you know, hidden camera experiments where a guy will just go up to random women, ask them out or ask for their number, and they're usually fine with it. You know, it's very rare that he'll run into somebody who absolutely like takes his head off. Yeah. And it speaks to what you're talking about there. You know, the fact that like, yeah, like if you take the initiative, I always remember, I got good advice young where it was women always like a man with a plan.
So, yes. You know, very good.
Yeah. Yep. So that's very true.
Yeah. And a man that doesn't have the confidence to approach a woman, well, you know, if he's a woman doesn't want to see a man afraid of her, you know, that's not attractive. So if a man has enough confidence to approach a woman, it says that he thinks he has a chance. And even if she says no, that's okay. That's not about you. That's about her. And so go on next, you know, okay. Yeah. She said no. And I heard, a young guy, I was on another podcast, not too long ago. And these guys were like in their 30s. And he said, you know, when I was a little bit younger, he goes, we used to practice, like we'd go to the mall and we would practice approaching girls and mm-hmm. say, hey, you know, I'm so-and-so. Hey, you look nice today. I'd love to, you know, ask you out and just kind of see. And he said, we trained ourselves to get used to being rejected. He goes, and not every girl rejected you, but if you were, it was like, it's okay. Again, don't let that be a hit to your self-esteem. It's just practice and keep going because then when the ones that do say yes, it builds your confidence. You're like, okay, I got this. You know, there's women that find me attractive and would be willing to get to know me. And there is. And I always tell women, you know, if you want to be approached by a guy, you need to flirt. You know, you need to, you know, with your eyes, with your smile, because when a woman looks at a guy and smiles, what does that say to you? What does that say to you?
Yeah.
It's okay to approach.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, for sure.
Water's safe. Come on in. But yeah. if she looks away and gives him absolutely no attention, she's not interested. But if she's smiling at you with her eyes, that says, come on over, talk to me. And I also tell women, don't ever be the first one to speak. Mm. Flirt with your eyes, with your smile, give him eye contact. If he approaches you, let him be the first one to introduce himself, to say hi, because that's being the masculine. That's the masculine role, the initiator. And then the woman can, and then you're setting the stage right there for the feminine and for the masculine. But I do believe the man should be the first one. And now on that note, I've heard men say that are a little bit more bashful, a little bit more shy. Oh my gosh, I would love for a woman to approach me. I mean, that's all day long because I'm bashful. So what I tell women is so that you're not the masculine, you could say to a man, if you ask me out, I'd say yes. Mm-hmm. And then don't get all butthurt if he doesn't. Like, don't get all personal, but you're just giving him permission. And then if he wants to, he will. If he doesn't, he won't. And again, it's nothing off of you. You know, don't take it personal. But you've got to find a way to connect some way.
Didn't they used to call that dropping the handkerchief or something? It was a woman would drop her handkerchief.
That's good.
And then a man would be like, it's like, okay, there's your in.
There's your in.
You'll pick it up and you got something to talk about, I guess.
Right. That's good. Yeah.
That's classic. What do you think are the biggest, differences in how men and women relate to each other, communicate with each other? I know those are that's a bigger conversation, but I'm just kind of like the bullet points or shorthand. Yeah.
Well, I think they relate differently to everything. Yeah. I think we see our differences in how we think, how we speak, how we listen, how we're motivated, how we relate to our feelings. You know, men relate totally different to their feelings than women relate to their feelings. Men relate differently to their own needs than women. You know, for a man, his needs are direct, immediate, and critical. Mm. And so if he doesn't think her need is direct, immediate, and critical, he's probably not going to do anything about it because he's relating to her need the way he relates to his. But the way a woman relates to her own needs is she's very self-sacrificing. So, you know, a lot of women, they'll make sure everybody else is taken care of first. You know, the kids have what they need, the husband has what he needs, and I can wait, you know, to get my needs met, which isn't necessarily a good thing because that's kind of what gets women cranky and naggy and critical because they don't take care of their needs. They don't take care of themselves. I think the way men and women communicate, they communicate differently. That, you know, women talk, they give a lot of details. Yeah. And I always tell women to talk when you are talking to a man, give him the bullet points. You know, here's one, two, and three. Be very specific. Use as few words as possible. If he wants more details, he'll ask. Yeah. Right? You're laughing because you know it's true.
Yeah. I've had so many instances where I've gone off to another place while, so, you know, my fiance has been telling me something. What did I just say? I maybe remember the last word of what she said, and then I can maybe extrapolate what the subject was.
That's so funny. Like, because if my wife is telling a story to me, it's very much like, she'll go down and she's like, and then so-and-so was there, you know, so-and-so, you met them at this barbecue where blah, 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 blah. And then like, this becomes a whole nother side plot that I wasn't ready for. It's like, if you're looking for those details, it's actually super impressive that all those things are included and in that conversation. But if I'm trying to figure out what the reason is that I'm listening to this, the bullet points would be so helpful.
Yes. And see, for women, if men could understand the way women are designed, and this goes way back to the beginning, you know, when women had to, you know, the men would go out as the hunters, right, to bring home food, and the women would go to the meadow to gather the berries and the vegetables, and they, you know, gather them in their basket, and the details were really important, because if she waited too long, the critters would get them, and then the family's going to starve. So she had to know exactly the time and where the sun was, and, you know, the right time to go out and gather food for her family. So there's something in a woman that women love details. Details make her feel safe. Yeah. And so that's why she's giving you details, because see, we're relating to you the way we relate to us. And we're thinking you need all the details. And so if women could just understand, men don't. Yeah. And that doesn't make them bad. It doesn't make them insensitive. It doesn't mean he doesn't love you. They just don't need it. It's not important. They need the bottom line. They're single focused. And so, but understanding that about women, this is important to her. And so for her, if you're not giving her details about your day, your life, your experiences, red flag. It's like, what? Like, you don't love me? You don't care about me? You don't want me involved in your life? Yeah. Like, I need to know all the details. You know, if he comes home and says, hey, you know, my boss's wife had a baby, the woman is going to go, oh my gosh, boy or girl? I don't know.
Yeah. Said,
how was the labor? Yeah. Like, how long was the labor? I don't know. Well, what'd she name? What'd she name the baby? I don't know. All I know is he had a baby. He doesn't care. I tell my husband all the time, well, I'll ask so many questions. And I'll go, why don't you ask these questions? I need to know these. This is important information. He'll go, that's what you do. That's not what I do. I'm like, okay, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so funny. I'm already like a very kind of internal person too, which, so it's so funny when you see like my wife and I's text threads, the difference in sizes and paragraphs between hers and mine and hers and mine.
Like, no.
Yeah. And I've tried to get better over the years to where like, whether you could understand more emotion in it using emojis and stuff, which I never thought, like, I was like, I used to think a man doesn't use emojis, but I found out it was super helpful for her to understand where the tone of my very short answer.
Women love emojis, whether you're trying to get somebody's attention or whether you're just trying to maintain a relationship. Emojis are very important.
True. That's true.
It's funny that you mentioned like kind of like coming home at the end of the day, because for me, and I don't know if this is common with all men, but you know, I only have myself to go on. But the last thing I want to do is talk about all my details at work. Like, I am fine not even referencing work until the next morning again.
Right.
But I know that I don't know what it's like, you know, for you, Donovan. But even in past relationships, like most women want to go through every detail of the day, about their work and all that stuff. Like, so how do you, because there's such different approaches, how do you, like, what's the answer to help make that work?
Well, I think if women understand men and how they function, and if men understand women, then it gives you a grace for one another. It's like, okay, he just got home. Like, I have said this and I got a lot of pushback on it, but I believe that men need a little time to transition after a long day at work. And when I ask men, how much time do you need, you know, when you get home from work, and they'll say, I need at least 30 minutes. And they need to kind of just unload, change clothes, maybe get on the internet, maybe watch the news. You know, they just need some time to transition a little bit, and their testosterone levels are a little bit lower now. And then he can be fresh and have energy for the family. So if women, instead of him walking through the door and you throwing the kid at him or start, you know, bogging him down with everything that's wrong and I need, you know, all your stuff, just give him a few minutes, give him 30 minutes. And then when he comes to the dinner table or comes out of his man cave or whatever, he'll just have more energy to be present with you. Now, women, you know, who are working full time and they're exhausted too, will say, well, what about us? What about us? Yeah, if she's working full time, she needs some time to zone out too. But you've got to work with each other. You've got to find an arrangement. She needs to talk. You don't. So maybe you say, okay, I'll be ready to talk to you. Let's wait until the kids go to bed. Or let's, you know, here's a time we can talk. And give her that out. You know, give her, let, she has to have that outlet because, you know, we handle our stress different. That's another difference. So you're stressed out from the day, you go inward. She's stressed out from the day, she goes outward. She's got to talk about her stress or her levels will keep going higher and higher. So if she gets to talk, even if you're just listening, she might not need you to solve any problems. I just need to process through. And just you being there, giving me eye contact, knowing that you care about how I feel, that's all I need from you. It's very validating. But if you dismiss her and like, I don't got time for this, I don't want to hear this, then she feels dismissed, devalued, disconnected. And so women, they talk to connect. They connect verbally. And I think if men understand that, then they're not looking at women as stupid or silly or ridiculous or irrational. That's how women connect. And they just want to connect with you. And connection with you makes them feel safe in the relationship. And that's what women are all about, feeling safe. So if she feels heard, then she feels connected. If she feels connected, she feels safe. And then she feels open to being vulnerable. And men love a woman who's vulnerable, especially in the bedroom, right? So who's open and uninhibited. And I always tell men, it's better for you if you give her that time, you know, give her your ear. Women, the secret to sexual arousal for women is what she hears. So, and when you're talking to her and speaking, whispering sweet nothings and being romantic and telling her how beautiful she is and how you can't wait to touch her body and just all these things, it's like that, she's in ecstasy hearing those things. And, you know, there's a million love songs written, you know, over the years about, you know, whispering sweet nothings. And that stuff, it really is real because that's how women, that's what makes them connect to a man is her, him saying sweet things to her. So,
yeah, it took me a while to understand that. I mean, I've been married almost 13 years, but, yeah, it's just two totally different languages we're learning from each other. Yeah. And it takes a lifetime to learn.
Right.
Well, and I always heard the thing about, I mean, I remember, I don't know who said it, if it was my mom or it was probably somebody who my mom was either reading or listening to when I was younger, but it was the thing about decompressing after the workday for men. And I think I also heard it described as like men are like rubber bands. It's like they need some time to, you know, like kind of almost get back to normal after.
Yeah, they've been stretched all day. They need to come. Yeah. Yeah.
So that is, I've definitely found that. And I even wonder if men, this just occurred to me because I have such a hard time working out in the morning, but I even wonder if I think a lot of men would probably benefit from just like engaging in some masculine energy, like kind of in that in-between time where they can almost work out stress and sort of at the same time be slightly productive. But yeah, that's very, very true. Your words ring true.
Yay.
One thing that I've kind of learned too is just like the way groups of women relate to each other and the way groups of men relate to each other. You know, women get together and, you know, they'll have coffee and they'll talk and catch up. And I feel like for the most part, like even Donovan and I, like when we get together, we're like, we've gone like rucking or hiking together. It's like men are kind of like get together side by side and then women kind of get together face to face. Like it's funny. It's funny how groups relate to each other that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And women will talk about a million different topics, switching gears from one subject to the next, at mm-hmm. any, and all talk at once and still be able to hear what everybody's saying. And I will tell women, watch men, watch when men get together. They don't interrupt each other. They just sit there and listen. And one man is speaking at a time. They're talking about a certain topic, for a long time before they go to the next one. They don't switch gears that fast. And they just, but women are interrupting each other. And all at one time, my husband always says, when I walk in, you got the girls over. He goes, oh my God. He goes, nobody's listening to each other. They're just all talking. I go, we can hear everybody perfectly. But that's another way that we're very, very different. And I think it's because of that. And maybe it's a hormone issue because our hormones are so different that why men need longer to transition after a workday than women. Women need time too, but I believe they transition faster. Just like we can go from topic to topic in a discussion, because the way our biology is set up, we can go from left brain to right brain, from masculine to feminine energy, where men take a little bit more time to come over to the other side. They just... And I don't know if we need to get in this. I'm not a scientist or a doctor, but to the best of my understanding, I've learned that it has everything to do with the way have you guys heard about corpus callosum that's in our brain? It's like that white matter in between our right side and left side. And when we're younger, the man's corpus callosum is wider, so he can't switch over from side to side as fast, which is what very thing that makes him single focused. It's the testosterone levels, and women's is thinner. So as we age, men's testosterone starts to lower. Our testosterone, we start to get more. Our estrogen starts to lower. So now the corpus callosum for the men starts to shrink and get narrower. So as they age, men start to become more emotional. They become more multitasking, a little more sensitive. You'll see an older man cry more, showing more emotion. I've seen it in my husband when he hit his 50s, and he's a preacher. And I would see him, he's a man's man and a very intense man. And he would start like getting emotional in front of hundreds of people. And I'd be like, oh my God, like I'd never seen him like that. And when I started learning about the hormone changes, I'm like, oh, it's like he's getting more sensitive. I'm getting more single focused. And now I'm saying, save the details. Give me the bottom line. I'm like, oh God, I'm changing into a man. You're changing into a woman. And I found out that's actually very normal as we get older. Again, it has everything to do with the way our bodies are designed and our hormone levels. And I think understanding that, again, gives us compassion for one another, gives us grace for one another.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm always amazed at how much, how many things at once that my wife can do, where I'm like, if I can't even listen to a podcast and read a text message at the same time without having to back it up a minute to see what I missed.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, if I walk into the living room, my husband's watching a show, and I'll go, hey, hon, and I start talking to him, and I'll just start talking to him, and he'll go, whoa, wait, and he puts it on pause, and now, start over. Yeah. And then I go, you don't have to pause it. I'm only going to be here a second. He'll go, no, I want to pay attention. I don't want to miss this. Yeah. He'll walk into the room. I'm watching something. I just let it go. And I'll just start talking to him. It's like, I don't care about every second of the movie or whatever. Yeah. But
Or like you could probably still hear what's going on at the same time and then start and get both information at the same time.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yep. I wanted to talk a little bit about why men feel like in general, obviously these are all general statements, but why men feel like they can't be vulnerable, as it's seen as a weakness. Mm-hmm. And why is that? What are ways to make that better?
That's a big one. And I posted a video about that. I'm not sure if you saw it, but oh my God, I got over 1,000 comments from men saying no. Because I was talking about the strength in vulnerability and that it's okay to be vulnerable. And it's actually a pure form of strength because it takes courage. It takes a brave person to be vulnerable because you don't know what the outcome is going to be when you share your real feelings about something. And vulnerability is all about your willingness to face your fears and to pretend like you are not afraid of anything as a man, or that you're not hurt about anything, or you don't feel bad about anything. It's not true. And just for a man to ignore his emotions, and that's what leads men into bad behavior. You know, that's what turns men into, you know, into adulterers and addicts, because they're trying to medicate because they're suppressing all this stuff and they don't want to talk about it because they think a woman will think it's weak. Mm-hmm. And now, to be fair, some women do. And which if the women are in my classes, you know, they always say, I get this question all the time, like, how can we get our men to open up to us? And what she means is, how can I get him to share his feelings? So you want him to open up and share his feelings, but yet then you'll turn on him, and this is what I hear from men, and use it against him and throw it back up in his face, maybe at a later time, which is only exposing her own fears and her own weaknesses by doing that. And I think that's cruel of women to do it. And it's like, if a man doesn't feel safe with you, that he can share that, yeah, I'm a little nervous about my job, or I'm afraid for the future right now, or I'm not feeling like a man right now. You know, if he hasn't had any wins in his life, and he's maybe lost his job, or maybe he's failed at something, you know, that's really hard on a man, and he needs a woman to be supportive and to let him be real and authentic, because that's what vulnerability is. And to me, that's all it does is strengthens the connection. But if you have an emotionally unhealthy woman, an immature woman, a little princess girl who's entitled and spoiled and demanding, yeah, I can see why you wouldn't want to make yourself vulnerable. You're not going to handle it.
Yeah.
And so I think men, when you pick a woman, you need to realize that woman has who she is going to be critical to your emotional well-being, your emotional health. She'll be a support and an encourager and enhancer and lift you up and edify you. We all need that. You know, we don't need to be put down and told what we're doing wrong or where we're not right. We get enough of that from the world. We don't need it in our romantic relationships. So I think it's just women learning men and men learning women.
Yeah. That's
what great. Do you think about I don't want to call it a theory. It might be more of just a practice of like, men almost going to having time where they go to other men with issues could possibly damage the relationship, as opposed to some issues that they'll go to their wife or I guess ultimately just having a I don't want to make it sound like you're delineating, you know, certain categories that you never go to your spouse with, but like almost that balance between sharing and being vulnerable with other men and sharing and being vulnerable with your spouse, because sometimes I do feel like men are afraid, especially young men are afraid that they may overshare and that maybe they'll just drop an atom bomb that somebody's not quite ready for, and they may just do a lot of damage and possibly even traumatize the person.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really good for men to have good men in their lives that they respect, they admire, they look up to, that can be mentors to them, that are totally in favor of your marriage and your wife, someone that isn't that can be objective and isn't going to talk bad about your wife to you. Like, you don't ever talk bad about someone's spouse to the to the spouse ever. I would never share personal, intimate stuff about my marriage to people, number one, that I know can't help me. Number two, that'll take my side and be mad at my husband. I need someone that would be objective and tell me if I need to stand down, if I'm wrong. And I think for a woman, if she knows her man has good, respectable men that value the same things that you value and that she values, that's a safety net for her. Like for my husband and I, because everybody's going to buck heads at some point. And in our marriage, when we have bucked heads, we're at a standstill. We cannot come into an agreement about a certain thing. I used to say to my husband when we were younger, of course, this was in the beginning of our marriage, I'd say, okay, let's take this, you know, pick the man, pick the person, the man or woman that you look up to, you, that you look up to, that you would submit to, a godly man, a pastor, a dad, a brother, a friend, you know, and let's take it to him because we need a mediator because we're not coming together. And I would all say, hey, if I'm wrong, I'll defer to you. But if you're wrong, you defer to me. And every time I'd say that, he'd go, okay, wait, let's rethink this. Like, you know, because he didn't really want to do that. He wanted to be manly enough and strong enough to be able to work out our issues without having to bring a third party in. But there were times when we did have to bring a third party in. And I think that's healthy. I think it's good. And these particular people were people I knew that would advocate for me, you know, because they had a respect for me also. So I think you need to be careful about who you choose, but, and you and your wife need to be in agreement in unity about who you share with and who she shares with. I don't think there's anything wrong with sharing with a professional counselor or a pastor or someone, you know, that you both admire and respect.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. It's funny. So when I was living in California in our church, we had a lot of friends that were, you know, that had like a marriage counselor that they had seen, you know, either for periods or overtime and stuff, just because they thought it was so helpful for their relationship. A lot of the things you see online, at least I've seen kind of the manosphere online, they say that counseling is like not helpful to men in relationships, that it always kind of like biases towards the women, and men end up leaving feeling like they're, you know, they're the bad guy. That hasn't been my experience. Both my wife and I, you know, saw a counselor for a brief period together. We both decided it would be helpful, ended up being super helpful.
Yeah.
And so there was this kind of mutual, we're both there to kind of, to work on and grow together. But yeah, I'm just curious, what do you think about that with, like, in terms of counseling?
Well, I think there's probably some bad counsel out there.
Yeah.
For sure. So you got to be careful who you're listening to. And you definitely don't want to go to someone who's biased toward one gender or the other. I've heard people say that marriage counseling isn't good. It doesn't work because I think if there's one person that's unhealthy in the relationship, the relationship's going to be unhealthy. You know, like, we both need to grow and evolve and do our personal self-work and bring our best into the relationship. And I think a good counselor can spot that. But one thing that I have to say, this surprised me, psychologist John Gottman, he's got the Gottman Institute, and he's the best research for marriage and couples. And he says that, and they would bring people into like a lab, like an Airbnb type setting, and hook them all up and have them talk to each other. And he had, I think, 93.6 success rate at being able to tell if that couple was going to last in a relationship and how long it would take them to get divorced. He could tell that by listening how they interacted with one another. And he says that it's most women will suggest counseling or want to go to marriage counseling or want to get help. And it's usually the men that are more resistant because that's vulnerable. That's a vulnerable place to be because, yeah, she's going to dig in. You know, the counselor's going to dig in and get to the root of the issue. And John Gottman says that the research actually comes out that men have more power to make or break that relationship. It's the men that have the power to make or break that relationship statistically, which I was surprised because personally, I think women are a big part of the problem. I really do because women don't understand men. And but that's what the numbers said. So I think, again, both of us have our part, you know, both men have a lot of power, women have a lot of power. And if women can walk in their true natural feminine power, I think a man will do anything he can. He'll bend over backwards, go out of his way to meet her needs, to make her happy. Although it's not your job, guys, to make her happy. You know, that's a personal thing. She's got to be happy on her own. But you can contribute and make her happier, okay? Which is why you're girls are marrying you. Or wait, one of you is not married yet, right, Brandon?
I'm not married yet.
You're not, but you're engaged.
I am engaged, yeah.
Okay, and you've been married for 12 years,
yes.
You said. Yes, yeah. Okay.
Almost 13, coming up on it soon. So
good job. Yeah. So yeah, you picked a person to marry that you felt like you had similar values. You had that connection. There was the chemistry, the compatibility. You could talk. You know, all those things had to be in play for you to say, will you marry me?
Yeah.
And Brandon, I hope all those things are in play present, and which is why you are getting married soon.
Yep. Just about 2 months away. So
yeah.
so we've done a little bit of work to get there. Yeah. Not a whole lot of work. So that's at least.
Well, a lot of the work comes after marriage.
Feel like, yeah, I guess leading up to it. Feel too, like
everything leading into it is wonderful and bliss. And you're in that euphoric state of love and you feel like it'll never end. And it's when it starts to fade after marriage. Because marriage magnifies everything that's not working in the dating season.
Yeah.
And people think, well, once we're married, that'll change.
Yeah.
No, it won't. It'll get worse. But so hopefully you're having those conversations, going into marriage. But but then you have to do the work to stay married. You've got to do the work. Mm-hmm. You got to keep listening to her. You got to keep talking to her. You got to keep pursuing her. You know, that doesn't end once you know, women, you've heard it said, what it takes to get her, it takes to keep her.
Never stop dating your wife
absolutely.
Is the other version. Do you have any advice about living in a relatively small apartment right after? Because I know, so essentially the apartment, she has an apartment and I'm, you know, it's better than my living space at the moment.
Okay.
So the long and the short of it is, she doesn't want to move because she's got furniture there and stuff that she'd rather just not put through that. I'm looking at this apartment and I'm like, oh, this is, it's nice, but it's not necessarily the most spacious environment in the world. So I imagine benefits to that are that it's literally more of an intimate space. So you get to know each other better. but also, do you have any tips on like what kind of along the lines of what we were talking about with decompressing at the end of the day, like what can men and women do, or when is it necessary to sort of almost maybe even get away?
Yeah.
Luckily, I mean, there's like other areas of this apartment complex where, you know, gym and social area and stuff.
You could take a walk or
going.
So is it just like a one bedroom apartment?
Yeah. One bedroom apartment. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay. So I've heard it said that it's great if you get a new place together when you're first starting out, because you're starting this new life together in both of your place. It's not his place. It's not her place. Depending on how territorial she is, you coming into her environment. Right. I mean, if you're both in agreement and in unity, you know, and she's not going to get weird about it.
Luckily, I don't think we have to worry about too much of a territorial aspect.
Okay.
As long as I don't start throwing things out of her closet, I'm sure I'll be okay with that.
Yeah.
And as long as I maybe close the shower curtain and put the toilet lid down, those would be the main things probably are the most important.
But here's the thing: if you both need your space too, she can go in the bedroom and you can be in the living room. Like there's always a door there, or like you can go outside and take a walk, or I mean, there's other options. So again, just what I think is personal to you and to her, and what you both are in agreement, you know, just always try to be in unity, you know, being in unity is where the blessing is. So don't make decisions that you're both not in agreement with as much as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good advice.
And what you said too, like, about, you know, how things fade and it takes work. That's a super controversial idea this day. Now, you know, this day and age with like, everybody has this kind of Disney idea of happily ever after, or they've listened to a few too many Bruno Mars songs, or I don't know what the kids like these days. But that's a hip new reference from, I guess, 12 years ago for me. But yeah, I mean, that's the truth is, it always gets to a point where you do have to do some work. Like, I mean, you know, that if you care about this person, you have to work together to grow and relate to one another. But some people will say, well, I'd rather just get divorced than my relationship having to be, you know, that much work. Is like they say, like, that's what they say. It's like, well, it's probably not meant to be if it takes that much work. What do you say about that?
Well, how many marriages do you want to have in a lifetime? Because if you're chasing that euphoric state of being, the in love feeling, the chemistry, you will always be chasing it because it will always fade. You're always going to, every 6 months, need a new partner. You know, how many kids and families are you going to make in a lifetime? Yeah. I mean, that's where the maturity comes in and seeing what is real. What is the reality of life and relationships? It is, if you're just chasing chemistry, good luck, because you're going to have to change your partner on a regular basis. But if you believe that love is not a feeling, it is a choice, it is a behavior, it is a decision, it is a commitment, you have to buy into that to stay in a long-term relationship, because you're not going to wake up every single day feeling all in love. You know, I mean, she's going to have kids. Her body's going to change. Your body's going to change. You're both always changing. And so you've got to grow with one another. When people say, well, we fell out of love, I'm like, oh, you don't know the meaning of love. You think love's a feeling, right?
Yeah.
You choose to love. When my husband and I were dating, we were very young. I knew nothing. I had no training or teaching on any of this stuff. And he was a few years older than me. And he had a lot more wisdom and knowledge, even at a young age, because he had been in the church world and they taught him a lot. I wasn't. And I met him. First of all, I wasn't attracted to him at all. He was not my type. And then he started coming around. We were hanging around in a group. And little by little, you know, I started getting to know him. And I'm like, oh, he's funny. Oh, he makes me laugh. Oh, we have a lot to talk about. And little by little, this attraction grew on me. And attraction does grow on women, not so much men. Men kind of have their type, but for women, it grows. But even with men, you know how it is. You can see a beautiful woman that you're physically attracted to, but then you get to know her and you're like, ooh,
yeah,
because her personality sucks or she's not nice. And soon she's not as attractive as you first thought. Well, yeah. Same with men, for women with men. Like, I was not physically attracted to my husband. I wasn't repulsed by him or anything like that. It just wasn't a physical attraction. The more I got to know him, I became emotionally attracted to him, to his intellect, to his sense of humor, to who he was. And oh, he looked better and better. Pretty soon, I was physically attracted to him. And I saw the change, and it kind of blew my mind. We did start to fall in love. 3 months into it, 4 months maybe, that feeling started to fade. And I thought, oh, I was just infatuated. I don't think I'm in love with him. And I told him that. I'm going to break up. And he was like, love's not a feeling. He goes, you think that you're going to feel that way 10 years down the road? He goes, you need to make a choice. And I was like, oh, no way, no way. It is so a feeling. He taught me that. And I thought, well, I'm too young to make that choice. I'm not ready to make that choice. And I broke up with them. Oh, well, 2 weeks with no contact, I started to miss him. Like, he's a great guy. So I went and climbed through his bedroom window because he was sleeping in the middle of the day because he worked graveyard. And he was shocked. He couldn't believe it. He thought he was dreaming. And I was trying to get in. He wouldn't answer the door. He lived on the bottom floor. Thank goodness. And I literally climbed through. So now I'm like, hi.
I'm sure you literally blew his mind. Like that would be... Like you said, that always seems like a dream.
Kind of thing. You could have just stood out the window with the stereo, like John Cusack.
Yeah, that's it.
right. No, I had to be clever and creative. But we were married 18 months later, and yeah. I was the one pulling back saying, I don't want to get married. I'm too young, too young. And he was like, okay, well, we need to get married or break up because, you know, and that's another story. He was going into the ministry. He's like, we can't be having sex and outside of marriage. So either we get married or we break up. And I was like, there's no way. I'm too young. But he stayed the course, and we did. We got married. So
that's awesome. Yeah. And I feel like, too, like you're talking about, well, then you don't really know love. Like that is the truth. Like over time, when you get passed through that kind of infatuation period and you start to grow and do the work to learn each other and get to know each other more over time, that love is so much deeper than it is than like the puppy love part. You, like getting past that and looking back, it's like it's so much more than what
richer.
You, yeah, so and much richer.
How many have you? How many times have you heard people say, "I love them more today than I did on our wedding day"?
Yeah,
you know, and they've been married 10, 15, 25 years. And I can honestly say that about my husband, because now we've grown together. We've raised a family together. We've worked together. We've built a life together. And yes, you have to do things, you know, once that starts to fade, you have to do things to keep that spark, because your body, your mind has a memory. It's like muscle memory, right? Yeah. And so you have those date nights, you have those getaways. You know, I always tell women, don't stop wearing lingerie. Like be the sexiest version of yourself, even if you don't like your body anymore. Because for a man, this is the great thing about a man being visual and being so single focused is, and this is what I tell women, when you're naked, he does not see the stretch marks or the lopsided boobs or the, you know, he doesn't see, you know, the 5 extra pounds on you. All he sees is a naked body and he cannot wait to get into it.
Yeah,
but what women do, they go, oh, and they cover up and they don't want you to see. And oh, honey, do these stretch marks, are they ugly? And I always tell women, do not point out your flaws to a man. He's single focused. He's focusing on the end result, not at every little thing that's wrong with you. He doesn't even see it. So why would you draw his attention to it?
Yeah.
And women are like, oh.
I'm gonna send a note to our editor to cut that into a public service announcement. Starting at women, don't stop wearing lingerie.
Well, that's great. That's actually a great place to end on.
End on a good note. Yeah. Good message.
If people want to find you, what's the best place for them to go and get your content?
Podcasts, Danielle Hage podcasts. Danielle Hage, I'm on YouTube. My podcast is on YouTube. Instagram's probably my biggest platform right now. And Facebook. I think I'm on Threads. I think I'm on all the platforms. You should have got me everywhere.
All the Twitters.
So, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Well, I'd love to have you back on at some point to, you know, there's so many things we didn't cover, but I'd love to cover more in the future.
That'd be fun.
Thanks again. You have a great weekend.
I appreciate it. Thank you.